Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. We open the show today with some important breaking news. The devastating firestorms that led the governor to declare a state of emergency in San Diego County last week are finally nearly over. As of this recording, all fires in San Diego County's unincorporated areas are now contained. Evacuation orders have been lifted and all roads are now reopened. But the fires took a steep toll. In Carlsbad, a man believed to be a transient lost his life in the Poinsettia Fire, and he has not yet been identified. The fire also destroyed 8 single-family homes as well as multifamily housing in the Carlsbad area. The destructive Cocos Fire burned 36 homes and 7 commercial buildings, charring some 2,000 acres, and that one is 89% contained as of right now. The Bernardo Fire scorched over 1,500 acres. Fires on Camp Pendleton had burned more than 22,000 acres as of the weekend, and several smaller fires also forced evacuations and road closures previously. East County was largely spared from the devastation this time around, unlike in 2003 and 2007 when the firestorms started in East County and swept westward into the urban areas. This time, East County did have some small fires, including a 17-acre one in Lakeside and a 28-acre fire in Sycamore Canyon near Santee Lakes. There were some evacuations, 1,300 of them in Lakeside, as well as smaller spot fires in Alpine and Dulzura. Now, the causes of these fires are still under investigation in most cases. We do know that a backhoe used during construction has been identified as the cause of the Bernardo Fire, and 2 teenagers have been arrested for setting fire to a park in Escondido, but these arsonists are not believed responsible for the other major blazes. Police are reviewing a video showing a suspicious start to the Poinsettia Fire in Carlsbad, where a bystander's video shows a tree bursting into flames on a golf course with an unidentified man watching it burn and then leaving in a golf cart. Although the causes of the other fires are not yet known, a joint arson task force has been formed to investigate. Santa Ana winds swiftly fueled the flames into firestorms, and in the Carlsbad area, a rare fire tornado, a twisting column of flames caused by the fire creating its own bizarre, treacherous weather conditions, was captured on video. During the firestorms, many residents were left without power. In some cases, that was intentional. With SDG&E cutting off power to many customers, the utility has confirmed, in an effort to prevent lines from sparking fires as they did during the 2007 firestorms. In other cases, the outages were due to high winds blowing down power lines. SDG&E's actions may have prevented some fires, but it also left some residents without communications to receive emergency information and without air conditioning or even the ability to plug in a fan during 100-degree heat. Supervisor Diane Jacob responded by urging SDG&E to cut power only as a last resort and only if there's an actual system failure that could ignite a wildfire. The county has now opened a recovery liaison office for the May 2014 firestorm survivors at the County Library's San Marcos branch at 2 Civic Center Drive in San Marcos. That office will be open from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day this week. And you can also download the Red Guide to Recovery, a resource handbook for disaster survivors, at the county's site, sdcountyrecovery.com. Now we're going to hear from Leon Thompson, who has some additional fire-related news.
Jerry Weber lost everything in a fire that destroyed his trailer and all his belongings on May 13th in Campo. He has no fire insurance, relies on Social Security, and has serious medical conditions. Maria Amaya owns Angelou's Barbershop and Beauty Salon in Campo, where Mr. Weber has been a customer for many years. So now she's accepting donated items at her business at 31476 Highway 94, such as food and clothing. But she says the greatest need is a trailer for the displaced senior to live in. He is presently living in his car despite temperatures that have soared to 100 degrees since the fire and is determined to remain on his property, Miss Amaya said. He has no water on site nor electricity. If you have a trailer to donate, you can call Maria Amaya at 619 478-9353. In addition, a fundraiser to benefit Mr. Weber will be held at the Bucking DeLorean restaurant in Lakeside on Monday, May 26th, from 4:30 until 7:30. The restaurant will donate 15% of proceeds and is also encouraging the public to bring donations of food, clothing, household goods, toiletries, and funds. Bucking DeLorean is located across the street from the Lakeside Rodeo Grounds at 10109 Main Avenue in Lakeside. The benefit event will feature a live band and a mechanical bull for those who want to try out their bull riding skills. For details on items needed by Mr. Weber, such as clothing sizes, you can visit the Wildfire News section on our website at www.eastcountymagazine.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
Volunteers are needed to answer calls at San Diego's 211 public hotline. The wildfires raging across San Diego County over the past week proved the importance of the 211 public hotline for providing vital information on evacuations, shelters, and services. During the crisis, 911 callers sometimes got busy signals as the system became overloaded with non-emergency calls. Dialing 211 for non-emergencies is important for freeing up the 911 lines. Fire rescue chiefs and law enforcement have given their salutes of thanks for the 211 public hotline resource on which they and we all depend. But more volunteers are needed to answer calls at the 211 public hotline before the next emergency occurs. You can join the 211 volunteers by going online to 211sandiego.force.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barren.
The chippers have been out in force in Lakeside's Eucalyptus Hills neighborhood. Lakeside residents know the importance of creating defensible space, so last weekend, the Eucalyptus Hills Fire Safe Council held its 15th annual School Chipping Day event. Chairperson Bob Robeson, a retired fire chief, said that on Saturday, 36 residents brought in a total of 69 truckloads of vegetation to be chipped. The chipping crew worked Saturday and Sunday morning to chip up all the material, neighbors helping neighbors to keep their community safe before the next wildfire strikes. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Supervisor Diane Jacob is introducing a measure on Tuesday calling for a waiver of plan check review and building permit fees for those seeking to rebuild structures damaged or destroyed in the May 2014 wildfires throughout the county's unincorporated areas. The waiver will apply to replacing homes or businesses lost with structures of similar size on the same location. Supervisors will also vote to ratify a countywide emergency declaration freeing up $5 million in contingency reserve funds to be used for fire recovery and response costs. Supervisors will also hear a proposal to waive fees for fire victims to replace birth certificates, marriage, or death certificates lost in the fire. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Ed Barreno with East County Magazine on KNSJ with today's weather report. The National Weather Service has issued a wind advisory for San Diego County's mountains and deserts. The advisory is in effect now through 3 a.m. Wednesday morning. Strong westerly winds are forecast of 20 to 30 miles an hour, with gusts as high as 65 miles per hour. Strongest gusts are expected along the desert slopes of San Diego County's mountains. Expect reduced visibility in deserts due to blowing sand and dust. High winds will make driving difficult, especially for motorists with high-profile vehicles. Watch for broken tree limbs and other debris on roadways. Along with strong winds, also expect cooling temperatures 10 to 20 degrees below normal for this time of year, as a low-pressure system from the Gulf of Alaska moves across the region, bringing low clouds and fogs each night and morning this week.
This is Miriam Raftery with some sad news about a soldier from Pine Valley who has been killed in the Middle East. 19-year-old Adrian M. Perkins died in the Jordanian capital of Amman on Saturday, the Defense Department has announced. He was assigned to the 1st Battalion, 67th Armor Regiment, 2nd Brigade Combat Team, 4th Infantry Division. This young soldier was shot at a military base in Jordan. A spokesman for Fort Carson in Colorado, where he was stationed, said no Jordanians were involved and that the military is still trying to determine the details of this tragedy. The soldier died at King Hussein Hospital in Jordan.
A flyover by the Bucher Squadron's World War II biplanes will be a highlight at the 4th Annual Memorial Day celebration at the Alpine Veterans Wall of Honor on May 26th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Festivities will also include patriotic music by the San Diego Festival Chorus and Peter Hastings as the community honors and remembers over 500 veterans commemorated on the Wall of Honor. Alpine Kiwanis will serve up hamburgers and hot dog meals for $5. The program will begin at 12 noon. The Alpine Wall of Honor is located next to the Alpine Community Center at 1830 Alpine Boulevard in Alpine. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio.
While next Monday, we will be remembering the men and women who died while serving in the United States Armed Forces. Memorial Day can be thought of as one of the most important holidays in the United States. Observed annually, every last Monday of May, people usually take some time off from their work and other activities to reflect on the significance of this all-important celebration and enjoy many outdoor activities and events. Make this Memorial Day memorable by following some of these safety tips from our Chief's Corner columnist at East County Magazine, Sam DiGiovanna. Avoid food poisoning by cooking fresh poultry and beef properly and to instruction. Thoroughly clean the grill of any grease or dust. Do not use a grill indoors, near hazardous vegetation, or near any surface that can catch fire. To prevent drowning, avoid alcohol when swimming or boating. Wear a life jacket whenever you are on a boat. Make sure young children are supervised at all times when near the beach, on a boat, or by a pool or hot tub. Do not swim alone. Wear sunscreen with at least an SPF of 15 or higher and apply it generously throughout the day. Wear a hat outdoors. Drink plenty of water, especially when in the sun or if you are sweating heavily. Do not drink and drive. Wear your seatbelt at all times. Make sure your vehicle has been properly serviced and is in good condition before a long road trip. Be patient. Many of the factors that will determine your safety over Memorial Day weekend or any time this summer will come down to good decision-making and common sense, says Chief DiGiovanna. As someone who sees the consequences up close, my best advice is know your limits, be mindful of certain risks, and stay smart.
This is Miriam Raftery again, and we're going to pause for a station ID, but please stay tuned, listeners, because when we come back, we're going to be interviewing Ernie Dronenberg, our county assessor, recorder, clerk, and then his opponent for the upcoming election, Susan Gwynn, a consumer attorney. And also, Mr. Dronenberg is going to have an important announcement for us of interest to survivors of the firestorms that just swept through the region this week. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. And today, my very special guest is our county assessor, recorder, clerk, Ernie Dronenberg.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me here today.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you, Ernie. And immediately after this interview, we will have Mr. Dronenberg's opponent, Susan Gwynn, arriving and do an interview with her. So stay tuned if you want to hear both candidates in this race. Now, I understand that there's going to be some good news for the fire survivors this week from your office. Tell us what you're doing to help them.
Well, last week we announced that because of the fire, we're going to reassess all the burnt property. Mm-hmm. Now, if it's fully destroyed, we'll take completely all the improvements off the roll and just have a tax on the land. But if it's partially destroyed, we're going to reduce the value. This we announced last week. This is a great thing because when they rebuild the property, it won't have the new cost. It'll have the cost that they had before. Mm-hmm. We go back and have the old cost. So It's a very fair thing. It's the least we can do.
Right, right. The supervisors, I understand, also are taking some actions to waive some fees. Is that right?
Yeah, I put a recommendation in front of the Board of Supervisors, who will vote on it, to eliminate fees for copies of birth certificates, death certificates, and marriage license. These are fees that the people that lost all their valuables in the fire, they have to replace them. These things are invaluable.
Right.
And so here again, it's the least we can do for these people as a government to say, look, come on in, get your documents, and we'll bear the cost of it.
And what about the fees for building permits and so forth? Are there any adjustments on those to help them further?
There are adjustments depending on the jurisdictions. You know, for example, if you're in Carlsbad, you have fees from the Carlsbad.
Right. So this would only apply to those homes that are in the unincorporated area of the county for the building fee purposes.
Correct. Correct. And, for example, I live in the unincorporated area right across the way from the highway fire, and there were no buildings burnt in that, unfortunately. But if they had a burnt, then the county would have jurisdiction.
Got it, yeah. Now, you are also running for re-election. And, Ernie, before you became clerk, I understand that you were the chairman of the Board of Equalization, chairman of the statewide franchise tax board. So you're kind of known as the, I've seen it on your own flyers here, you describe yourself as an overqualified tax geek.
Actually, that was a moniker given to me in the LACS election by one newspaper. I take to it because that is my background. I've got 30-plus years in tax administration. I'm considered an international, national, and local tax expert. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I am. I'm a tax geek.
Very good. So can you start by telling us what the assessor, recorder, clerk does and why it's important? In other words, why should voters care about who holds this office?
Well, the assessor is responsible for determining the property tax value for all the properties in the county. There's over 1 million assessable properties in the county. Mm-hmm. And I have a staff of about 250 and a budget to cover reassessing all those properties. Now, most of them are covered by Prop 13 base year value. Two-thirds of them are covered by that. So that's subject to an indexing formula. But any new properties, any change of ownership properties, any improvements, we are responsible for putting the value on. The second hat is that of the recorder. The recorder is responsible for recording all the legal documents such as grant deeds, trust deeds, quitclaim deeds, any kind of real documents dealing with real estate. The recorder's office is responsible for recording those, maintaining the records, and producing copies when required. The third hat is that of the clerk. The clerk does that of issuing copies of birth certificates, death certificates, and marriage licenses. Now, in addition to that, the clerk is also responsible for marrying people, and if they choose to have the clerk marry them. But we issue the licenses for people to get married, for everybody that wants to get married in San Diego County.
Very good. The person running against Ernie is Susan Gwynn. She calls herself an advocate for San Diego County taxpayers and a consumer advocate attorney. Now, Ernie, she has indicated on her website, which we took a look at, that San Diego County has the second highest rate for overpayment for unresolved property tax appeals. Would you like to respond to that?
Well, we're the second largest county.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the second largest county, given that you're the second largest, you'll probably have the second largest number of appeals. But that's really not a good measurement for how well we're doing, though. Mm-hmm. If you measure the appeals by the percentage, and I've done that, actually the county that has the most appeals by the dividing the number of appeals into the number of parcels, San Francisco is the worst. They have the highest percentage. Mm-hmm. San Diego is actually number 5.
I see.
Even if we have the second largest number of parcels, we're on number 5 in our appeals. And actually, when I took over, my predecessor had over 20,000 appeals. This year, we're going to have 6,000.
Okay.
We've cut those way down, and we're way ahead.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that point for us. I always like to start by asking an incumbent, what do you consider some of your most important accomplishments in office? In other words, why should people reelect you.
Well, I'm about customer service, and that's what my office is all about, is customer service. I've brought in outside training people to teach my people training customer service, because I'm changing the whole culture to be one of customer service. We measure customer service, and we reward on customer service. And our last survey done by customers, we had a 98% positive rating by our customers as to the service that they're receiving in our offices. So that is very, very important to me. But what I'm all about, too, is trying to get the costs out of government and reduce them by bringing in computers. Bringing in a new $52 million system. That's my budget has gone up because we're putting money into this new computer system. But at the same time, I've also made it easier for people to do work online. I want to take people out of line in my office and put them online on their computer. I put every form that when I walked in, I said, I want every form we have online mm-hmm. and fill-inable. So now every form we have is available to people to go online and fill it in. And now we've got the first one where you can sign it online.
Oh,
this
that's
is the
interesting.
First,
much more convenient.
First in San Diego County of any government agency to have a signable form, and we led the way.
Very good. Now, your opponent has indicated that your office did raise fees on some small businesses and families by, she says, $2.3 million. Can you explain to us what that was all about?
Well, that's not an accurate number. We disagree on a lot of numbers. I'm
sure.
If Susan come in, she'll make all kinds of claims that I've got the documentation to refute. But mm-hmm. We did raise fees my first year in office. We came in, and the law is that we're supposed to recapture our costs. So I brought in, we did time and motion studies, and we brought all the fees up so that we're recapturing the cost like the law says. Mm-hmm. And what's important for people to understand is, if I charge a person the right fee, then we don't use tax revenue to supplement it. See, it's a user fee. If you're paying the right amount, then we don't have to take the general fund taxes to pay for that. Mm-hmm. So and that's why the legislature put that in the law, that you recapture your costs, because they want the taxes to be used for welfare programs where you don't recapture. And when somebody comes in and gets a fictitious business name, they pay the cost of that fictitious business name. That's an additional thing we do. But fees are important, and we brought them up to not any more or any less than what our costs were.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Some of them hadn't been increased for 15 years.
There you go. Now, you have been embroiled in a little bit of controversy over the gay marriage issue when the Supreme Court decision came down basically saying that Prop 8 was unconstitutional and that gay marriage should be reinstituted in California. You filed a challenge to that, and it led to some of the same-sex marriage advocacy groups to post a site called Dump Dronenberg over that.
Right.
I'd like to give you a chance to respond to that and also to ask, how are things working out now that gay marriages actually are being performed by your office?
Okay, good question. As the San Diego Union put it, it was a tempest in a teapot, because what happened is the U.S. Supreme Court said there was no standing for the Prop 8 supporters. So it then rolled back to the District Court of Appeals. They vacated their decision. So it rolled then back to a district court judge's opinion that Prop 8 was unconstitutional. That opinion was then given to all the county clerks across the state. And I looked at it and said, you know, I don't have the ability to challenge this. It's when you balance things, you look at them, I'm going to do what they're telling me to do. So we started marrying people the first day. We continued. We added staff mm-hmm. because this was right in the middle of a very busy period. We added staff.
Yeah. A lot of backlog of these.
And it was in July, which is our biggest time of the year for people getting married, June
wow.
and July and August. So we started what's called Walk-In Wednesday.
Yeah.
That means anybody could come in and didn't have to have an appointment. But I rallied my staff and said, we're going to have this workload. We got to get it done. So we got it done. We met we had a commitment that if you came into the office by 5, you would be walk out married. And we made that commitment. My challenge was not on whether or not gay marriage was legal. My challenge was on the procedural.
I see.
It was on three issues that related on the procedures in which the case, and I asked for clarity.
Mm-hmm.
So that when the
Can you give us one example of one of the procedures?
Yeah, one of the procedures was that the Constitution says that an official like myself or a legislator, nobody can declare a provision unconstitutional without an appellate court decision. This judge that made this decision was a district court decision.
I see.
And so I said, please explain to me how the law applies in this situation, because this was a district court judge, not an appellate court
decision. There you go. I always like to ask candidates for office who their major endorsers are. Which, can you list maybe four or five of what you consider your most significant endorsements, Ernie?
Well, I'm endorsed by the realtors. Those are people I work with the most. The San Diego County realtors, San Diego, the North County, and the East County, and the South. All four groups have endorsed my candidacy. They work with me on a constant basis. In addition to that, the San Diego Union did a very good endorsement of me. And, some of the active labor groups, like the San Diego Deputy Sheriff's Association, endorsed me, and the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association endorsed me.
Right.
Okay. I have about 13 different endorsements, so we'll stop there.
Okay. Well, that sounds good, and I appreciate you sharing that. And let's end by circling back to the fire issues. For those of you that tuned in late, we're talking with Ernie Dronenberg, who is our county recorder, assessor, clerk. In addition to discussing his candidacy for re-election, we also were talking about the fire issues and some steps that his office has taken to waive certain fees and things and reduce some property assessments on the burned properties. So if someone listening out there is a fire survivor or knows somebody who is and they want to know how to get help or how to get information, Ernie, how do they reach your office?
Well, they can go to the website, www.sdarcc.com.
Okay.
All right. Or we're going to go out. We're proactive. My office is very proactive. We're going to try to find those people. Because a house is destroyed, they change their land use. We're working with land use agency to find out where those are, and we're going to try to identify and find them. Problem comes when they don't have a mailbox and trying to get a hold of them. So if we'd encourage them to look us up and call and contact us, but we're trying to find them at the same time.
Very good. And if they want more information about your campaign, what is your campaign website?
The website is www.ernie4assessor.com.
Very good. Ernie, I want to thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine show. And also, we're glad to hear that your house is okay. I understand the fires came off.
The fire was about a half mile away. We could see the flames. We were concerned, but we were just very fortunate the wind was blowing the other way. And I want to thank you for having the show. You know, low visibility, down ballot offices like this one don't get a lot of people's attention. So any opportunity I get to speak, in fact, that's one of the things I enjoy about the office. I spoke over 50 times about the office last year. So anybody out there that has a Kiwanis Club or Rotary Club and they want a cheap speaker, one free, that guarantees to have people enjoy the topic, contact my office. We'd love to come speak to you about the Board of Equal, not about politics, about the assessor's office and the clerk and the recorder's office. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important for the people to understand what these offices, so they can take advantage of them. And you don't know what you can get if you don't know what can be given for you.
Well, we're certainly very committed at KNSJ to reflecting all voices and views, and certainly to highlight, as you've noted, some of these races that are important, but where people may not read about it. Some of the other media, they're all focused on who's running for Congress or City Council, and they overlook a lot of the down-ticket races that actually are very important and have a very direct impact on people's lives. So, Ernie, again, thank you very much for joining us here today on East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. We are going to be right back after a brief station ID to interview Susan Gwynn, who is running against Mr. Dronenberg for the countywide race for the assessor, clerk, recorder position.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Miriam Raftery, host of the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. And now my special guest is Susan Gwynn, who is a consumer advocacy attorney, and she is taking on incumbent Ernie Dronenberg for the countywide assessor, clerk, recorder position. Susan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. That's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. Yes. Tell us a little bit about yourself, what some of your qualifications are for the job, so to speak.
Thank you. I've been an attorney for over 20 years in consumer advocacy. My firm was one of the 10 firms that started the tobacco litigation and received a $3.3 billion settlement on behalf of county government.
Wow.
Thank you. I've had numerous cases after catastrophic loss and hundreds and if not thousands of cases involving business valuations and residential valuations as well, and have had cases here in the county where I protected hundreds of, and in some instances, thousands of businesses and families from being charged fraudulent taxes and fees as well.
Very good.
Thank you.
Now, I always like to ask a challenger, why this race? Why are you taking on an incumbent? What are the main issues where you might do things differently or perhaps better?
Wow, that's many questions in one.
Okay.
The reason I think a lot of people don't realize how important the assessor, recorder, county clerk position is. It oversees $400 billion worth of valuations throughout the county, which results in essentially the economic engine that drives the county. So who's at the helm is vitally important. The incumbent's been in this position for 3.5 years. Prior to that, back in 1998, he retired from the Board of Equalization, which, by the way, his role there was 99% of that was sales and use tax and not related to the current role he's in. When we look at the actual hard data for the performance over the last 3.5 years, he has done a terrible job for our families and our businesses. We are being overtaxed, and it is imperative we remove him from office. If he was in the private sector, he would be fired.
Now, in all fairness to him, when he was here earlier today, I asked him about a statement on your website where you indicated that San Diego County is the second worst in the entire state in terms of unresolved property assessment issues or challenges. And his answer was that, well, if you look at the population, based on population of counties, we're actually fifth, that wasn't completely accurate, according to him. What would your response be to that?
I find it amusing that he wants to argue as to whether or not he's 58 out of 58 counties as far as the worst performing, or 53 out of 58 for the being in the bottom fifth of the counties. Mm-hmm. Essentially, according to the Board of Equalization, San Diego County ranks second worst in the state for uncompleted assessment appeals. We know that he left 14,506 property appeals uncompleted last year. San Diego County ranks second worst in the state for its backlog of assessment appeals. He only completed 12,180 assessment appeals. To give you an idea or context for this, the prior assessor, Dave Butler, in his last fiscal year in 2010, completed over 44,000 assessment appeals.
Hmm.
Mr. Dronenberg has only completed roughly a quarter of that number.
And appeals, of course, are very, very important when you've had property taxes falling, for example, because of the economy. And now, certainly, we're going to have people seeking reassessments because of the fires as well. You know, I'd like to ask you, by the way, about the fires. When he was here, he mentioned some things that his office will be doing to go out and see if some of these properties need to be reassessed downward. And the supervisors are looking at waiving some fees. What do you believe needs to be done to help the fire survivors in this disaster, or for that matter, future disasters that may occur if you were at the helm?
I find it inefficient that the incumbent doesn't already have a policy in place. For example, why do we wait for every fire to happen before we decide how we're going to help people? I mean, the bottom line is that when people's homes are burned down, we know that the state requires that the improvements upon the land, that you don't get taxed for those things, right? You would just end up with your land basis. So that should be an automatic. That's not something that Mr. Dronenberg is giving any of these people. It's state required. As far as not charging for the de minimis fees for birth certificates and all those other types, that's a no-brainer. Let's have a policy for that. Why are we having to go and ask anybody to do those types of things? Let's be proactive. The bureaucracy has to change. One of the other things that should happen, frankly, is that we should be reaching out to these folks. Some of them may have been late on their property taxes or haven't paid a particular installment on their property taxes. Right now is not the time to be chasing them for money. And so regardless of where they are in that process, that should immediately stop as well.
Okay. Now, your website has indicated that the incumbent raised fees on families and small businesses by almost $10 million. I asked him about that. Could he explain that? And his answer was that they raised fees to cover costs. Fees hadn't been raised in 15 years. Do you want to respond to that?
The incumbent actually has raised his budget by almost $10 million. He's increased his staff by double digits. And even last year, he increased fees to small businesses by over $2 million. Those are all from budget documents from his office. The problem that I have with all of that is that essentially you end up with a bloated budget. He's charging his budget has gone up, his staff has gone up, and yet his workload and his workload performance has gone dramatically down.
You're trying to say that he's raised it more than was needed to simply cover costs, the fees. That he's raised them more than would be needed to simply cover the costs of running the office.
Exactly. He's inefficient.
Okay. Now, he will tell you, he's not here now. In all fairness, he had to leave. But he told us about his customer service ratings, that he has a 95% customer service rating. What do you say to that? Why would people, give him a 95% customer service rating if they weren't happy?
If you look back at the data on the assessor, recorder, county clerk, they have always had a customer service rating of about 93-94% per year. Mr. Dronenberg has had a 90-91% rating since he's been in office, though in December he got one rating of, I think, 97%, which he's touting as average now. The problem is junk in, junk out. How they're collecting customer reviews and service ratings is a box on the counter.
Interesting.
You fill out a little index card, you stick it in the box, and guess who evaluates that and decides if it's positive, negative, illegible, should it be thrown out or kept, and how it's documented? Well, it's Mr. Dronenberg and his management, and they get bonuses. They get actual incentives for having more positive surveys than not. So this is not verifiable. It's junk in, junk out.
Fascinating. Okay. Now, he also, he drew a lot of controversy during the whole gay marriage issue, because when the U.S. Supreme Court finally said that Prop 8 was unconstitutional and that California needed to resume conducting gay marriages, he filed a challenge to that, and as a result, some of the gay rights groups in towns put up a site called Dump Dronenberg. When I asked him about that, his answer was that he was really challenging it on procedural grounds. What are your views on this whole controversy, Susan?
I don't see it as much of a controversy. I think that the facts speak for themselves. Mr. Dronenberg went to county council. They refused to help him and told him to follow the law. He approached the county board of supervisors. They refused and told him to follow the law. He went outside of county council. He wasted taxpayer money. He filed a frivolous lawsuit to hire the attorney who put Prop 8 on the ballot and represented the other side through the Supreme Court and back. That is not seeking clarity. That is promoting your personal agenda, period.
Interesting. Okay, thank you for responding to that. Now, you have, on a more positive note, you have some interesting ideas as a, I guess coming from your background as a consumer advocate and consumer attorney, for having the clerk, assessor, recorder's office do some community outreach and actually get out into the communities. I presume that would include some of these unincorporated areas in East County where we have a lot of listeners, other parts of the county. Tell us a little bit more about what you have in mind if you're elected.
Thank you. I believe that we need to, with a staff of 410 people and a budget of $65 million, we need to get out from behind the desk. We should be out in our churches and our community centers and our schools on, if it's not monthly, then on a quarterly basis, depending upon the area and the interest. And with our laptops, where we help small businesses figure out only what their fair share is. You know, there's so many people that don't have access to the system. In addition, while we're out there, they can bring in their questions regarding foreclosure, bankruptcy questions. How does that impact them and their valuation, other types of things that, frankly, they don't know what their resources are. We should be out there answering those questions, helping them to determine those things on the spot, and then inviting the nonprofits in the area and the other folks in the area so that when you come in, it's a fair of some type, where you go from table to table to table, and you're able to access resources, some of which you don't even know exists and are there to help you.
Well, there you go. I would like to also ask you who you consider your most important endorsements. And for those of you tuning in late, we did interview Mr. Dronenberg, the incumbent, earlier, and he listed primarily realty groups that deal with his office and some law enforcement. Who do you consider your most significant endorsements, Susan?
You know, I have not been chasing endorsements nor seeking lobbyist groups to endorse me. Of course, some of the big real estate groups have, their leadership at least has jumped on board because I believe they're receiving outsized tax breaks that are not fair for
special interests.
They're not fair for the other 99.9%. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that as far as my own endorsements, the Speaker of the Assembly, Tony Atkins, has endorsed me, Interim Mayor Todd Gloria, who's also the City Council President, and many other leaders, several congressmen, City Council people, mm-hmm. leaders in their communities, and leaders in churches have endorsed me.
Very good. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about your candidacy, Susan, that I have not specifically asked you about, or for that matter, about the incumbent and his record that I have not specifically asked you about at this point?
I would like the listeners to know that I am not a career politician, that when I turned 40, which was 8 years ago, I've spent over half of my time working for free and working for pro bono for San Diego County. And that includes starting a nonprofit with my son related to the environment called Kids Eco Club. It currently throughout the county provides services to already this year 30,000 youth. That includes health fairs, nutrition, cooking, environmental issues, science, even some physics labs. All of those are free of charge. In addition, I have worked within the county to help regarding slave trafficking and a whole bunch of different related issues.
Human trafficking, yeah.
Yeah, human trafficking.
That's shocking how much of that goes on right here in our own county.
Ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. And to help small businesses. So I've been here already working and helping people in the county. I am excited to be able to work for them on this issue. I think this office is absolutely fundamentally critical to restore fairness and appropriate property values so that the 99.9% are represented.
Very good. Well, I really want to thank you for joining us today, and I'll end by asking you where people can get more information about your candidacy, Susan.
You can go to SusanGuinn.com, and that's G-U-I-N-N, and you can see a little bit about me, see a couple photographs and see what my priorities are. And, of course, you can always contact me through that website as well. We're also on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter at Susan Gwynn SD.
Thank you very much, Susan, for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Thank you. I'm grateful for the opportunity.
KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, your network for social justice.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
Welcome to Job Talk, bringing you news about great jobs and growing our regional economy.
This is Ed Barrena with today's Jobs Talk Report. California Governor Jerry Brown is introducing a set of tax credits aimed at keeping companies and jobs in California. The $750 million package also includes incentives to convince out-of-state employers to move to California. These tax credits will spur new jobs and help communities hardest hit by the recession, Governor Brown said. His plan would reduce the amount of sales tax paid by businesses buying equipment for manufacturing, food processing, biotech, research, and development. It also includes a California Competes income tax credit for employers that invest in new jobs in California. In addition, employers can receive a new employment credit on their income taxes if they increase hiring of veterans, recipients of public assistance, and ex-prisoners in areas with high poverty and unemployment levels, though at present, San Diego is not included in the designated areas for that new employment credit. If the program proves effective at reducing the government's costs for public assistance and unemployment benefits, then potentially the plan could be expanded in the future.
The curtain may soon be rising at the East County Performing Arts Center in the city of El Cajon. Now the city has issued a request for statement of interest for groups interested in using the theater. The deadline for submittal is Monday, June 16th at 5 o'clock p.m. Anchor tenants or partners should be willing to utilize the facility for substantial periods of time during at least the next 5 years. The Rock Church has already made a proposal to the city, which is under consideration, and the city is now reaching out to see if there may be other interested parties. The City Council has expressed intent to renovate and reopen the Performing Arts Center in the near future, with a likely opening in 2015, according to a statement issued by the city. The building has been closed for several years, falling into disrepair. Prior to completing the renovation design plans or commencing construction, the city wishes to determine if there are potential long-term tenants in the marketplace. City Manager Doug Williford says, "Reopening of the East County Performing Arts Center will be an exciting event not only for El Cajon, but for the entire region. With a 1,145-seat capacity, this is one of the largest indoor event centers within the region and has a long history of being host to many memorable performing arts and entertainment events." Williford concluded, "As we prepare the center for its bright future, it is important to the city that we investigate important opportunities to ensure the facility's long-term success. For more information or a request for statement of interest from potential anchor tenants, visit the city's website at www.cityofelcajon.us. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Lynn Moneyfires bringing you the Tribal Beat, covering the news for and about our region's Native American communities. Today's guest on Tribal Beat is Eric Runningpath. Eric is a member of the Navajo Nation and a professional Native American dancer who produces and performs traditional Native dances. But I learned that he's much more than that. He's traveled throughout the world as a cultural spokesman and peace ambassador, and he's going to share that experience with us today. Good morning, Eric. Thank you for joining us.
Yate. Hello. How are you?
Yate. I've seen one of your local library performances, and I was just spellbound by the elegance and beauty of the dance. How long have you been dancing, and how did you get into it?
I've been dancing now for almost 38, 39 years, and started dancing when I was about 9 years old. And my family, my dad being Navajo, going to different events growing up when we were little, to many powwow gatherings and a lot up at Barona, watching the dancers and learning the steps, listening to the drum, because a lot of it's all through hearing the tempo of the beat and watching the dancers and their step and being able to pick it up and just started getting out there.
Wonderful. Speaking of the dances, can you share the meaning of a couple of those?
I do grass dancing, what we call northern grass dancing. And northern grass dancing, the regalia is the proper name of our Indian clothing that we wear, represents the grass that grows upon the hills of Mother Earth. And in North South Dakota, Wyoming, a lot of tall grass. And dancers would go out and stump the tall grass and take and cut pieces of the grass, put it in their clothing, and that's what this yarn represents. They would say the prayer where the village was going to be and or the gathering was going to take place. Mm-hmm. We do the eagle dance. The Hopi, many tribes, the Cherokees, do the eagle dance, and I do the Hopi style eagle dance. Mm-hmm. The hoop dancing, dancing through the rings of circles to be able to keep the circle of life ongoing. Uh-huh. And so the warrior dance, a variety to honor our warriors and our veterans as well.
With all that you've done and all the places that you've traveled to, what are you the most proud of accomplishing?
Gosh, I've done so many different cultural events, different events all over. I've done the 1984 Olympics. I was known as the Olympic Indian. Oh. I was one of 30 Native Americans and the only two from San Diego to be able to participate, and the one being on TV.
Wow.
Traveling to other countries, dancing in Moscow in 1990, mm-hmm, for a youth conference in Moscow, Tajikistan, Denmark, Belgium, France, all over, sharing, and in Israel, in Jerusalem.
Tell me about Jerusalem.
Jerusalem was a very, very incredible opportunity. I was asked to participate in a conference, a peace conference event in Jerusalem, and to dance, to share my culture. And I got to go over and I danced for 2,000 Palestinian and Israeli people, and got to go to both sides there and meet also a lot of youth, young kids, and share my talents, my culture, our traditions of dances. And they just love being a native, just the over warmth of being there.
That's wonderful, powerful to do 3,000 people in front of the temple. That must have been an amazing thing. I understand you worked with Duncan Hunter.
Yes, I worked with Duncan Hunter Sr. for many, many years. And in 1990, with all the traveling and giving back to the community, all the different things that I've done, he appointed me as ambassador through Congress to the United States.
A well-earned designation. Thank you. I mentioned earlier that I saw you at one of the library performances. Why the libraries?
The library is to be able to share. I do so many schools, preschools, libraries in our community, and it's always great to be able to give back and to be able to share traditions, the dances, the songs that are handed down from generations and generations, and to have those kids be proud of their culture, their background, natives, the kids that are from the different reservations in our area here, and also kids that are non-natives, if they're African-American, Hispanic, German, Irish, Chaldean, whatever it might be, to be able to keep their traditions, their language, their ongoing culture alive.
That's a definition of giving back to the community. I know I appreciate that. And where can people contact you?
They can contact me at runpath09@yahoo.com on my email.
Okay, that's runpath09@yahoo.com. Thank you, Eric, for sharing your story with us today. I'm hoping you might come back and share some of your stories over at Moscow and Jerusalem. Continued success on your path. Thank you, listeners, for turning into the Tribal Beat. If you have a story you would like to hear more about or a person of interest in the community, contact us at editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with today's Green Scene Report. The San Diego Energy Foundation has been seeking to start up a Community Choice Aggregate, or CCA, as a competitor to SDG&E. If approved by the city, this CCA would allow consumers to purchase power from the CCA instead of San Diego Gas and Electric. Marin County and Sonoma have already started up CCAs to give ratepayers more choices on where their power comes from. Here's how it works. When a community decides to start a CCA, it sends notices to all ratepayers, advising them that their billing will automatically be shifted to the new CCA, unless a person objects and wants to stay with the utility company. In San Diego's case, SDG&E. But now a bill in the legislature aims to restrict the ability of local municipalities to provide consumers with alternatives to buying power from utilities. Critics of the bill, AB 2145, call it a poison pill that would hurt, not help, consumers by restricting competition. If passed, the bill will require cities and counties to make consumers opt into a CCA instead of transferring them automatically unless they opt out. This would make it much harder to enroll enough customers to be economically viable. In Marin and other places where CCAs were established providing power from clean, locally generated power sources, less than 20% of those notified chose to opt out. Lane Sharman, co-founder of the San Diego Energy District Foundation, said that very few people opt in to anything. Thus, this bill guts the very provision of community energy law that assures a successful launch, all in on day one unless they opt out. In the Bay Area, Lean Energy's Sean Mitchell agreed, stating that AB 2145 would completely gut the ability of California communities to viably launch CCA programs that can compete on a level playing field with investor-owned utilities, EcoReport indicated. Marshall called the bill anti-consumer, anti-competition, and anti-environment. Ann Hancock, executive director of the Center for Climate Protection, called community choice the most powerful solution local governments have to significantly reduce greenhouse gas emissions. This bill would steal that solution from cities and counties throughout the state, she said. Sierra Club's Andrew Christie said that if AB 2145 passes, community choice will be replaced with zero choice. Despite these objections, the bill has passed a policy committee and has now been referred to the Standing Committee on Appropriations.
The next time someone tells you you need some young blood, they just might be right. It turns out that old mice who were infused with blood from spry young mice showed significant improvement in their memory, sensory function, strength, and endurance. The mice also had improvements in certain heart problems and even generated new nerve cells. The findings could hold promise as a potential treatment to slow or reverse dementia and other old age-related conditions in humans. Science and Nature Medicine has published study results which found that a protein called growth differentiation factor 11, or GDF11, is responsible for this apparent fountain of youth effect in the mice. Older mice have reduced blood flow that impacts the brain, heart, nerves, and sense of smell, like in humans. Old mice infused with young blood were able to regain their sense of smell, researchers found, and they were able to navigate their way through mazes. Researchers hope to test GDF11 on humans in future clinical trials. Lee Rubin, a professor of stem cell and regenerative biology at Harvard, said this could mean a way to reverse some of the decline of aging with a single protein, the Sacramento Bee reported. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.